Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jen Wolf. That is Chris Canty. That is Nick Wright.
Good to have you in, Mr. Canty. Appreciate you.
Chris Carter is down in Atlanta for the big game.
So bring in the righty. Bring in the Super Bowl champ. Here we go.
For sure.
Let's do it.
For sure. No one else but you could do the job. We have a huge show, so you pick the right one to come fill in. A lot of NBA news to get to, but of course we are going to start with Super Bowl 53. The storylines have all been discussed, all the angles covered. Tom Brady and the Patriots trying to win their sixth Super Bowl this century, while Jared Goff and the Rams will try to win the team's first Super Bowl in Los Angeles. A matchup between the greatest coach of all time in Belichick and a young and up-and-coming Sean McVay. So what will the moment be like come Sunday? Here's Tom Brady.
You want to play for those rings. That's what being a competitor is all about.
The magnitude of this game, it's a blessing to be here. Our players and coaches have earned the right to be here.
They've had a great year, and I have a ton of respect for what they've done. The way they've done it, and we're going to go out there and do our best to compete against it.
This is the big dance, you know, playing great football all year, but this is the last one. You know, you got to play your best football. This is the biggest stage, you know, the biggest stage I ever played on. So we just got to keep playing football at a high level. Don't forget what got us here, but, you know, leave everything out there one more time. You know, one more game, opportunity to be a world champion.
Is Errol Donald so excited that he's already wearing his uniform?
I'm
never taking this off. All right, Nick, I've been waiting all week to ask the question, who's got the edge come Sunday, Rams or Pats?
All the measurables say the Rams. Mm-hmm. The record, the points, the overall talent, the number of Pro Bowlers, all pro players, all of that says the Rams. But the Patriots have been at a disadvantage in those measurable categories in each of their previous two playoff games, one of which was on the road, and they obviously dominated the Chargers and dominated the Chiefs for three quarters until a furious late comeback by Kansas City forced overtime. All the intangible edges go to New England. Experience, the overall, like, greatness quotient of the coach-quarterback combo, the fact that we know they will not commit self-inflicted wounds. I think this game is going to come down to one very specific question. Can the Rams create legitimate pressure on Tom Brady? And I don't mean pressure of the moment. I mean guys like Chris Canty, around his size and frame, knocking Tom Brady down. Where we have seen over this last half decade, with the difference in Super Bowls or playoff games for Patriots, wins and losses have been, did you get pressure on Brady? Go back to the Seattle Super Bowl. A forgotten point Bill Barnwell brought up this week. I thought it was brilliant. The game flipped when Cliff Avril went out of the game with a concussion. Mm-hmm. From that moment forward, Brady was flawless, essentially. Then next year, when they lost to the Broncos, what happened? Brady got knocked down 17 times, and his wife was postulating after the fact that he was concussed in that game. Atlanta, once the fourth quarter hit, they stopped getting pressure on Brady, and he was flawless. Last year, they couldn't get pressure on Brady. Threw for 500 yards. They got one sack in that game. It was the strip sack that actually ended the game, essentially. So can Tlaib and Peters be left on island? Can Sue and Donald take advantage of that? Can Wade Phillips dial up some blitzes? If the answer to those questions are yes, the Rams have a distinct advantage. If they can't, Tom Brady and the Pats will pick them apart.
No, you're absolutely right, Nick. I think that a key matchup for this Super Bowl is going to be the Rams front four and their ability to get after Tom Brady, specifically in the middle of the pocket. Everybody understands that Tom Brady is one of those quarterbacks that you can't blitz. So in the Super Bowls that they've lost, teams haven't blitzed. He's only gotten blitzed 18% of the time. Of the Super Bowls that they won, teams have blitzed them 25%
of the time.
Because they had to. And so the key is you can't send additional rushers because Tom Brady is going to be able to exploit the coverages on the back end. So you have to make sure that you got at least seven in coverage on the back end when you're facing a Tom Brady-led offense. Now, you got to think that Bill Belichick is going to have a plan to neutralize Aaron Donald. So that's why Ndamukong Suh and Dante Fowler Jr. become important in this matchup. They're going to have to be able to win their one-on-ones. And I put more of it probably on Ndamukong Suh and less on Dante Fowler Jr. just because the Patriots haven't given up a ton of edge pressure this year. I mean, they're one of the better offensive lines in terms of not allowing edge pressure. But when you look at that interior line, if Ndamukong Suh consistently gets one-on-ones, he's got to win those matchups. It's going to be on him to be able to get Brady off the spot. If he can do that, I think that the Rams put themselves defensively in a good position to slow down this Pats offense.
This is my question for you. The intangible advantage goes to the Patriots. The tickets, the nerves, halftime, you know, duration of halftime, all that stuff, we know the Patriots have the advantage. At what point is this just about a football game now? Are we still going to go through all day today and all day tomorrow with all the extra stuff? Like, at what point do they sit down and Sean McVay says, all right, now it's just X's and O's. This is just the football part of it.
Well, here's the thing. You have to move past the pomp and circumstance and arriving to the Super Bowl city and all of that stuff. I think both teams, both coaches will get their guys past that. That happens in the earlier part of the week. The NFL does opening night with the media Monday. So I think that that part is kind of cleaned up for these teams. So now it's focusing on the X's and O's. And, Jenna, they'll make adjustments all the way up until game time when they get into that locker room. So, I mean, when I won Super Bowl 46, our defensive coordinator was drawing up stuff in the locker room right before the game. So there are always going to be little tweaks to the game plan. But ultimately, it's going to come down to what team executes the best. And in part, it's going to be the confidence that you gain from the preparation in the last couple of weeks. That's where I give the decided advantage to the New England Patriots, because they've been in this game the last 3 years, four out of the last five. So I have to give the edge in terms of being able to manage these past 2 weeks and the preparation till Bill Belichick and his coaching staff.
And Kenny, tell me if I'm right on this. I would imagine some of the things, Jenna, that you're talking about that we would imagine end or don't apply actually on game day can apply right up until kickoff. The extra butterflies you feel when it's like, oh, wait, so that's who's singing the national anthem. So that's the pregame. The length of halftime. Like, you are, tell me if I'm wrong, but you are constantly reminded this is not like every other game. You are constantly reminded I am playing in the biggest game of my life. Well, at least the biggest game of your life if you're a Ram. For the Patriots, it's the biggest game yet this year. Do I have that right?
No, you're absolutely right. Players will get to the stadium about an hour earlier. I mean, because of the logistics and all the security surrounding the Super Bowl, it throws your entire routine as a player off. So the organization, the players that are more used to or more accustomed to adjusting to the change in schedule, different things, they're going to give themselves a decided advantage, because the Super Bowl, from a scheduling standpoint, is unlike any other game that you'll play in the regular season or postseason. So you're absolutely right with that.
And there's one other thing for the whole league. If you're not a Pats fan or a Rams fan, but you're a fan of whatever team, the Miami Dolphins, the Jacksonville Jaguars, whomever, you're obviously going to watch this game. Maybe you don't have a rooting interest. These two teams have been built so differently, and it's very similar to the matchup in last year's Super Bowl. One of the reasons, because one of the teams is the same. The Patriots have almost never been about the splashy acquisition, about sacrificing the future for the now. The Eagles were last year. The Eagles traded picks away midseason for Jay Ajayi. They went out and spent money in the offseason because they thought they had a window right then, and it paid off with the Super Bowl. The Rams took that and did 5X of it, right? They traded away picks for Peters. They brought in Tlaib. Midseason, they traded away picks for Dante Fowler. Right. They gave contract. They traded away picks for Brandon Cooks, gave contract extension to Cooks, to Gurley. They did all these things saying, we think we can win this Super Bowl. And in a copycat league, when we've seen so many teams try to copy the Patriots method and almost all of them fail,
that's a good point.
If back-to-back Super Bowls are won by teams that say, you know what, forget the long-term planning, let's worry about the here and now, then your team out there, no matter who it is, assuming you have some level of credibility, some level of hope going in next season, your general manager might look at it and say, you know what, let's go try to win now. Let's not tell our teams, fans, it's a five-year build. Let's try to. The Rams were the laughingstock of the league 2 years ago, and they are now one game away from winning the Super Bowl. The Philadelphia Eagles had fired their coach 2 years before they won the Super Bowl. So in a copycat league, if we have back-to-back champions that were more worried about the now than the long term, that could be a trend that kind of infects in a good way the rest of the league, which for me would be exciting, because a lot of teams have tried to do it the Patriot way.
Yeah.
You can't clone Belichick, and you can't clone Brady.
Exactly.
And the Patriot way, first eight steps are Brady, Belichick, Belichick, Brady, Brady, Belichick. So the Rams winning, to me, would be an exciting potential turn for the league.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And if you're looking at these two teams, if you're going to buy stock in one organization for the next 2 or 3 years, you would think it would be the organization with the young core of skill position players, the young quarterback, and the young head coach. But when you look at Tom Brady and what Robert Kraft said yesterday about signing him to a contract extension, knowing that Brady and Belichick are going to be around, knowing the type of assets they have, knowing the type of cap space they're going to have, And, you know, you probably say you lean toward the Patriots, just knowing that when the Rams give Jared Goff his extension eventually, they're going to lose a lot of pieces on that team. They paid Brandon Cooks. They paid Aaron Donald. They paid Todd Gurley. You can't keep everybody. I think the Patriots are in a much better position for the next 2 or 3 years.
But you're already seeing players say, I want to be a part of that organization. Didn't DeSean Jackson just come out and say, oh, I'd love to play for Sean McVay within that system and not necessarily within the Patriots?
And it's a lot easier to deal with ramifications of being cap-strapped and not having picks if they end with the jewelry you've got. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. the Eagles are not worried about, what's it going to look like when the Bills do on Carson Wentz, because they have a Super Bowl ring. If Jared Goff and Todd Gurley and these guys get a Super Bowl ring, that those championships for the fans live forever. Mm-hmm. Those bragging rights live forever. And so that's one of the most exciting kind of subplots of this game on Sunday.
All right, let's take a break. A little basketball to discuss on the other side. How did LeBron fare in his return from
LeBron
injury?
Came back.
Oh, that's next on FS1. And you can always check us out on the Fox Sports Channel on SiriusXM. We're back right after this. Speaking of special players, the NBA gifted us with a few big surprises last night, one being LeBron James. He was considered doubtful for last night's game against the Clippers. Well, he returned to the floor anyway after missing 17 games, scored 24 points, was one assist shy of a triple-double and a big overtime win over the crosstown rival Clippers. The Lakers, now just one game out of the playoff picture, preparing for a big Saturday matchup with Golden State. Here's LeBron James on his return.
I'm not feeling, particularly great right now. I'm definitely ecstatic about being back out there with my guys and getting a great role win versus a team that we're, climbing, during, in the playoff race. But, after being out 5 weeks, I'm feeling it right now. I wish I could click my shoes together and be home right now in my bed. So. But it's great to be back out there. I love clothes. I love suits. But I didn't come here to put on a suit every day. I come here to put on a jersey and some shorts. That's what I came here to do and lead a team, best way I know how. So, that's the frustration part. When you're seeing your team struggle and you know how much you can help them and you can't do anything in a suit and tie. So, that's where the negativity starts to creep into the mind.
5 weeks away from the game, comes back and does that last night. How impressive was LeBron's evening, Nick?
Well, so, first of all, it was impressive he got his way back on the court. He had planned, circled this game, that I will be back by this game at the latest. Not only because they play the Warriors on Saturday, and they're about to go on a long road trip because of the Grammys, the Clippers and the Lakers about to be on the road for a long time because Staples not going to be available, but also because the Clippers are the team they're chasing for the eighth seed right now. Like, they got 30 games left, and if they had lost last night, they'd have been three back of the eight seed with only 30 games to play, and that the Jazz, who are ahead, are playing well. So this was a very important game, and LeBron was ruled out midday Wednesday, and then he got upgraded to doubtful, and I was hearing he was going to do everything he could to play. And then in the first half, you wondered, Canny, if it was a good idea. In the first half, he looked like a guy who'd been out of basketball for 6 weeks.
Yep.
And it took LeBron James one half of basketball to resume being LeBron James. After the first, in the second half and overtime, 19-9-5, if that does anything for you. This should have been a comfortable Lakers win. They were up a dozen going into the fourth quarter. They squandered that. They even almost squandered it again at the end of overtime with a bizarre Rondo inbounds play. But LeBron, the first time being away from basketball for an extended period since breaking his wrist playing football in high school, and it took him 24 minutes of basketball to get back to being the best player in the world.
No, you're absolutely right. And the lead was as many as 14 in the third quarter. They came out and started quick in the second half of that game. But as far as the flow of the Lakers offensively, I mean, LeBron James gives them an identity. They depend on LeBron James to make everything easier for everyone else, whether it was Lance Stevens cooking from behind the arc or getting Kyle Kuzma involved. Yep. I mean, all of those guys, it just felt like it was a little more effortless for those guys in terms of being able to have opportunities to get buckets. And so LeBron James creates that, just his ability to be able to command double teams and then his court vision and being a great passer. He puts those other guys in good situations. When they didn't have LeBron James over that 17-game absence, it looked like everything on the offensive end for the Lakers was forced. And so now when you have LeBron James, he sets the table for everybody else, makes everything a lot easier. So, I mean, LeBron James picked and chose his spots where he was going to give max effort, but I think it was a solid outing overall for him in his first game back after 5 weeks. I mean, one assist shy of a triple-double.
Yeah.
I mean, that's outstanding
and
performance.
His shot was not on. I mean, I think he made one shot outside of 8 feet, and it was a critical one in overtime, a really tough turnaround fadeaway. But he made a three-pointer as well. He made the 1-3 and then one shot outside of 8 feet. Mm-hmm. His shot was not on, and you could tell his wind wasn't totally with him. Yeah. Like, this was a good example of the only way to be ready to play an NBA basketball game. There's the shot I was talking about. The only way to be ready to play an NBA game is to play an NBA game, no matter what great shape you keep yourself in. And I was concerned. You asked me all year last year, Jenna, are you concerned about the Cavs? I was never concerned. But this was unprecedented.
The injury.
The injury was unprecedented, and that he alluded to it last night. There were a few setbacks that kept delaying the timetable. I was told 10 to 12 more days 20 days ago. So I started to be legitimately concerned about a week ago. And then I was told the Clippers game's the game. And then when he was ruled out, we still talked about it yesterday that he might play. But if he didn't play last night, there was going to be real reason for concern, not only for LeBron, but for the team and their ability to climb back in this playoff race.
So let's talk about that. Take away all the potential trades. This team that you saw last night with LeBron playing the way he did, with the rest of his cast of characters around him, could this team make the playoffs?
Yeah, I think this is a playoff team. Anytime you have LeBron James out there, this is certainly going to be a playoff contender. Now, are they going to be able to win a playoff series? Remains to be seen. It's a lot of young guys, but I think with the LeBron James injury, it puts a little more urgency in that Lakers organization. Magic Johnson, Rob Pelinka, to be able to get another difference maker to pair alongside him, just because we're starting to see LeBron James' career mortality. I mean, we're talking about a groin injury. We expected him back a couple of weeks ago. And so for him to be out 5 weeks, I think that those guys realize in that building, we've got to take advantage of having LeBron James. We don't want to think about his third year or his fourth year with the Lakers, because we don't know what type of player he's going to be at that point. Father Time eventually will catch up with you. Let's try to see if we can make a move to be able to pair another superstar with him, so we can take advantage of not only what we would have in 2019-2020, but see what we can do in the 2018-2019 season.
If they make the trade for Anthony Davis, they will have a puncher shot against Golden State. I think in reality what they would need is a full offseason to build the complete team and maybe have Kevin Durant go elsewhere.
Because you wouldn't have anyone else around him besides basically those two.
Correct. You would have to strip the team down almost in its entirety. And yesterday, one of the Lakers beat writers floated almost the exact trade we talked about on Tuesday as one that the Lakers had offered, and we knew they would offer that. But assume the trade doesn't go through. I had said the Lakers need to focus on, I thought their ceiling was the 3 seed in the West, and they were in the 4 spot when LeBron got hurt. Mm-hmm. Now it's about getting to the 6 or 7 line. It's about two things. Yes, making the playoffs, but being on the opposite side of the bracket of Golden State. Mm-hmm. So that means the 8, the 5, and the 4 are the spots you don't want. So the Lakers now, they had a chance at the 3 seed. Now you focus, can you not only jump the Clippers, but jump one more team so you're in that 7-2 side of the bracket, to where if you execute a first-round upset, the Western Conference Finals are a real possibility. One note, because this game ended 3.5 hours ago, it feels like. At the very end of the game, Rondo, the final possession, inbounds the ball, does something silly, tries to throw it off defender's leg, and the Clippers almost hit a game-tying 3. Rondo, in the effort to make up for his error, chased him down and turned his ankle. They didn't talk about it on the broadcast, and on League Pass, they cut right when the game's over. But if you were watching, he was noticeably limping after that. They play Golden State on Saturday. Lonzo's out, so something to watch is Rondo going to be healthy, or are the Lakers going to deal with another long list of injuries now that LeBron's back?
All right, we'll have to look for that. But let's take a little turn now. Time for Nick's Fantasy Update, sponsored by DraftKings. Nick, who do you got on Sunday? What do you like?
All right, so I gave you players from Los Angeles yesterday when we discussed this. Mm-hmm. Today we're going to go to New England's side of things. For the big money, Sony Michel. It's $10,200 DraftKings dollars. I think he will be used early and often.
I
do not believe that Belichick thinks the Rams' playoff rush defense is their real rush defense. I think he's going to make them prove it and see if they look like the rush defense from the regular season.
No, you're absolutely right. Sonny Michel on 70% of the snaps he's in, he gets the ball. So, I mean, that's going to be one of their featured players on offense.
And then as a flyer, cheaper player, Chris Hogan, only $3,800 DraftKings dollars. We saw him make an enormous play in the Kansas City game. Chris Hogan, again, I'm not making any big guarantees with him, but when you're down at the end of the roster, when you're trying to save some money in DraftKings, Chris Hogan, could he have one big play? Could he have one 30-yard catch that goes for a score? He could. So Sony Michel for your big money, Chris Hogan for your bargain.
All right, good stuff. The big game is just 2 days away, and DraftKings is cranking things all the way up with their Championship Millionaire Contest. For the first time ever, DraftKings is offering a contest for the big game with $3 million in total prizes and a $1 million top prize that you can play for free. Just sign up using promo code FS1 and draft 6 players for your shot at the top prize.
Hey guys, it's Nick Wright, and I want to tell you about Indochino, a new way for men to upgrade their wardrobe without breaking the bank. Indochino was founded on the belief that you don't need to spend a fortune on a custom wardrobe by taking the premium, made-to-measure experience direct to the consumer. They've created a superior alternative to off-the-rack clothing at ready-to-wear prices. Indochino allows customers to step into the shoes of a designer to create custom suits, shirts, chinos, blazers, and overcoats. They select from hundreds of fabrics and endless options, including lapels, pockets, buttons, linings, and monograms. Indochino couldn't make it any easier to start looking good. Just follow these easy steps. Visit a stylist at our showroom and have them take your measurements personally, or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric inside and out. Choose your design customizations, submit your measurements with your choices, and then relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in the next couple of weeks. My listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering FTF at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code FTF for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. That's an incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. Now, back to the show.
World featherweight champion Leo the Earthquake Santa Cruz puts his belt on the line against Rafael Big Bang Rivera live February 16th on Fox and the Fox Sports app. It is now time for Say What? We all know how much fun Gronk likes to have with the media. Check out this little exchange. Say what?
So, you know, you put in a lot of dedication to your body and everything, but there's one thing I love is just getting tickled. Like, you know what I mean? And if you're saying you don't like it, you're crazy. You know?
You should like the laugh or the sensation of it all?
The sensation. And it makes you giggle, too. It just feels good. You get your, you know, all the body work, all the hits we take, all the, you know, all the bruises you get. I mean, I just like being tickled. Ever since second grade, I used to be in control. Like, everyone would sit, you know, all in a line, and we would all tickle each other's backs. And then there I am. I'm in the front. You know, I'm not tickling anyone. I'm just getting tickles.
This guy.
The best. Sorry.
I mean.
The best.
He is
he speaks truth.
Definition Nick. Of a doofus.
No.
It's not a bad thing. Doofus is not a pejorative.
It most certainly is, Nick.
No value
it's
judgment
associated. It's a little shame to call somebody a doofus.
It is. Okay, but wait, listen. There's no way you can't tell me you don't like it. When you're just sitting
I'm
there
I'm not comfortable
someone...
talking about whether I do or don't like being tickled, and I certainly don't like the pantomiming that
I didn't
was
do it.
There.
I almost
you
touched
wanted
you,
to.
And I wanted to desperately, and
let's,
I didn't.
Let's do anything other than this.
Yeah, if you're talking about a kid in second grade, he can be okay with being tickled. You're a grown man. In front
That's
of the media.
He can do it. He's comfortable.
Playing in the NFL Super Bowl week, you talking about you like being tickled?
Tickled. And talking about how he was at the front of the line.
Think of all
selfish
the things he could have said.
What part of the game is that? I mean, I don't even understand.
Time for your AT&T wake-up call newsflash. Super Bowl is this Sunday. Matchup of the greatest quarterback-coach combo of all time versus the youngest quarterback-coach combo of all time. Chris Caney, what's the X factor in this matchup?
Well, I think the X factor is going to be the Rams' ability to run the football, because a lot of what they do philosophically on the offensive side of the ball has to do with play-action pass. Jared Goff spends more time under center than any other quarterback in the NFL. That's because Sean McVay is trying to put them in position to execute a play fake, create opportunities in the secondary. If they can't establish the ground game, play action passing is not going to be effective.
I'm going to go on the other side. Only three times in Brady's entire career has one player sacked him more than two times in a game. So anyone saying Aaron Donald's going to have 3.5 sacks, 2-4, that would be totally unprecedented. So the X factor is, can one of the others, Ndamukong Suh, Dante Fowler, as you've discussed, can one of them get home when the Patriots are spending so much time and attention on Donald?
So according to a report, the Dallas Cowboys will not extend Jason Garrett as he enters the final year of his deal as head coach of the Cowboys. This despite the fact that the team won a playoff game and won the NFC East this season. Chris Kenny, what did you make of this?
I'm surprised that Dallas didn't throw in Jason Garrett with all the other expiring contracts going to the Knicks. Seriously, there's a situation where you're only going to be as loyal as your options, and I think that Jerry Jones is going to explore the possibility of being able to upgrade his head coach, whether it's this offseason or the following offseason. Maybe more options will be available, but it's shown that Jerry Jones is not happy with Jason Garrett's performance.
And I actually think this is smart by the Cowboys. I've never agreed with the NFL's unwritten rule, which is coaches can never go into the last year of their contract. Why not? Like, he's not firing him. He's not saying I'm moving on, but he's not going to preemptively extend him. I think it's the right move.
All right, back to basketball. Now, LeBron James returned to the floor after missing more than a month. Didn't look too rusty either. 24 points, 14 boards, 9 assists and a win over the Clippers. Nick, what did you make of LeBron's performance?
Listen, I thought LeBron in the second half in particular was very, very good. In the first half, he did look a little rusty. His shot wasn't falling. He looked winded. Second half, 19-9-5, which you'll take for a half of basketball, even if you hadn't missed a month and a half. The Lakers ruled him out day before yesterday. And then quietly, I was hearing, hey, he might try to force his way in the lineup for a huge game. He did force his way in the lineup, showed up at 3:30 West Coast time at Staples yesterday, got his way in there, and they needed him in this OT win.
Yeah, the sign of a great player is making everybody around him better. With LeBron James, the Lakers are a top half of the Western Conference type of team. Without him, they're outside the playoff picture looking in. So LeBron James makes that kind of difference, makes everything easier for everybody around him, facilitates offense. LeBron James is the team right now. They got to get another superstar to go with him, though.
Speaking of another superstar, let's get back to that Anthony Davis rumor. A week before the trade deadline, the Lakers reportedly presented the Pelicans with 5 trade scenarios to acquire Davis. Nick, does this get resolved before the deadline?
Right now, I think it's 65-35 against, but the Lakers did yesterday what we said on Monday they would eventually do, which is present the exact trade we talked about on Monday. Ingram, Lonzo, Kuz, and Zubats, and a first-round pick. Now, they would have to throw in one more contract. I said that contract would be Lance Stephenson. You have to tell the Pelicans you can have it all and see if the Pelicans will pull the trigger. Some other NBA news that we're going to get to in a moment took some suitors away for Anthony Davis. So that, if you'd asked me this yesterday, I would have said 70-30 against. I think the odds got a little bit more likely with the Kristaps news.
Well, if it's up to Dell Demps, then I think that they'll wait until this summer to make a move and possibly deal Anthony Davis. But based on the leadership structure with that Pelicans organization, Mickey Loomis and Gail Benson being big figures and big players in that, if they're uncomfortable with paying Anthony Davis the remainder of his salary this year, then he's probably going to get moved in the next couple of days.
But if the trade does go through, then the Pelicans just become the Lakers.
Okay,
like that
correct.
Whole team just goes Absolutely. And plays in New Orleans. Now to the trade that actually happened. The Knicks sent Kristaps Porzingis to the Mavericks in exchange for Dennis Smith Jr. and 2 future first-round picks. Now, Kristaps has not played a game this season while recovering from an ACL injury. He had reportedly complained about the direction of the franchise and was subsequently sent out of town. Nick, what was your reaction to this trade?
I think it's a great job by the New York Knicks. And I think people that their gut reaction is, oh, my God, the Knicks screwed it up again. They're either just so conditioned to the Knicks screwing things up or they don't understand the bigger picture that they missed the boat on.
So lay out the big picture, because I think you're right. I think most New York fans' reaction is, another player doesn't want to play in New York.
Well, the reaction was, we finally hit on a draft pick, and we're trading him for expiring contracts, Dennis Smith Jr., and a couple first-round picks that won't become ours till 2021 and 2023. That's not what you traded Kristaps for. You traded Kristaps Porzingis for the ability to sign Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, for the ability to sign Kevin Durant and Jimmy Butler, for the ability to sign Kevin Durant and Kimball Walker.
Mm-hmm.
You now cleared the books. For the first time, I'm 34 years old. For the first time in my life, the Knicks don't have a bad contract anymore.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time in my life, they go into free agency fully armed in a good free agency year. There have been a couple times they've had cap space. It's just been the wrong year. It never was the LeBron year. They have always done it a year earlier or a year late. And the other part of this, Canty, that I think people need to recognize is Kristaps is a question mark.
Yes.
And he's a question mark that the next game he plays or the first game he plays next year will come with a $30 million a year price tag. He's no longer on his rookie deal after this year. 5 years, $150. That's what the freight was going to be to keep Kristaps. He's 7'3". People use that as, well, how are you going to trade a 7'3" unicorn? I'd rather Kristaps be 6'11". Because
mm-hmm.
Kristaps Porzingis is on a long list of guys that tall who have never been healthy.
Yep.
Other than Mark Eaton, I literally went through everyone in NBA history 7'3 or taller. Mark Eaton's the only guy to play a decade without getting hurt repeatedly. Sampson, Smith, Sabonis, Yao, Chuck Nevitt, if you remember him, Big Z. If you are, the human body is not built to be this tall. He already had a major injury. And so the Knicks clearly believe they're getting Kevin Durant. I do too. And now, Canty, they can tell KD, hey, man, if you can convince someone to come with you, we don't got to trade any picks. We don't have to move anything. We can do it right now. I love this trade for the Knicks.
No, I'm right there with you. I love this deal for the Knicks. And we were actually talking in the production meeting before the show.
I thought you were going to be on the other side.
You thought I was going to disagree with you. But I'm absolutely right there with you. I think for the first time in a long time, this New York Knicks franchise is healthy. Healthy from the standpoint of the hierarchy being on the same page, that being Steve Mills, Scott Perry, and David Fizdale. Healthy from the point that they've got cap space. Also healthy from the point that they've got draft picks. They got 7 first-round picks over the next 5 years. So they have maximum flexibility, which means that you have a lot of options once we get to this summer, not only with the draft and seeing where their pick this year falls, but also in free agency. So you got Generation K with Kawhi, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Kemba Walker, Kyrie Irving. You got a lot of guys out there that could be potential game changers for your franchise. So it made sense to clear out this cap space. And that's what makes this move different from what they did back in 2010. Because 2010, you only had room for one max player. They thought they were going to get LeBron James, end up being Amari Stoudemire. This year, you can sell Kevin Durant. Hey, you don't have to come and do this thing by yourself. Everybody says that that Knicks jersey is the heaviest jersey in the NBA just because of the expectations that come with it and the stage that you're playing on. You can tell Kevin Durant, guess what? You can outpick whatever other superstar that you want to come with you to play here. And then, of course, you do have a draft pick. So I think this is a good position for the Knicks to be in. People have to understand with this trade, they've got to view it through the lens that Kristaps Porzingis is a question mark from a couple of different angles. Number one, you don't know if he was going to re-sign with the franchise.
Correct.
Him and his brother Giannis were not sold on what James Dolan has done with this franchise. And then, of course, what you mentioned, Nick, the injury. There is no protocol for a 7'3" guy coming off of a reconstructed ACL.
Nick, I would also have to imagine that the Knicks weren't just, they're not just grasping at straws in the hope that maybe Kevin Durant, you don't make a move like this and this, you have some semblance of an idea that there is a pathway to bringing in Kevin Durant.
I have not been, and I'm not saying this to you, I'm saying this to the people that think, it's some people go on TV and just say, this, I think it would be fun, so let me postulate this. I would not have been for 4 months saying, I think Kevin Durant's going to be a Knick if it was just a gut feeling. Of course, things change, right? And guys' minds change, right? But everything has been building towards that. You know who knew it? Draymond Green, when he flipped out on him on the sideline.
Yep.
That Kevin Durant was looking elsewhere. And where could he go that would be a championship would carry the most weight? How about the prestige franchise that hadn't won one in 45 years. Some of the Knicks front office was there. Scott Perry, when they drafted him in Seattle. Rich Kleiman, KD's business manager, has ties here in New York. And now the Knicks can offer Kevin Durant something no one else can. Everyone can offer Kevin Durant the max. Everyone that has cap space.
Mm-hmm.
The Knicks can offer him his own franchise. KD, you can pick your teammate. You can pick everything. All we have is rookie contracts, draft picks. They kept, by the way, the Zion lottery ticket, which is, it's only 14%, but it's as good a chance anybody's going to have. And you are not tied to what I would consider an incredibly risky contract. And here's the other thing about Kristaps. If Kristaps, if he stays healthy and he continues on his progression, he's an all-star. But you have to be an all-star to be worth $30 million a year. Like, I think when people say, oh, this guy is one of the 10 best, okay, I'm just going to name guys. Tell me when I name someone that Chris Stapps is either better than or in the young guys that has a higher ceiling than. LeBron, Giannis, Steph, KD, Anthony Davis, Harden, Kawhi, Paul George, Russ, Kyrie, Clay, Butler. We're at 12. Now to the young guys. Luka, Embiid, Simmons, Jokic, Lillard, Mitchell, Ayton. We're at 19 guys now. And I didn't even mention Karl-Anthony Towns, De'Aaron Fox, Devin Booker. Like, yep. Guys that are – and so the Knicks, I've been told, the Knicks tried to include Kristaps in a move for Anthony Davis. Mm-hmm. You know what the Pelicans said?
No, thank you.
Nah, we're good. That should tell you where they're at.
So what does Dallas get out of this? How is this a win for Dallas?
Well, I think Dallas gets another cornerstone piece to pair with Luka Doncic, and that's the big thing for them, right? Being able to have some building blocks that they can move forward with. So, yeah, they're taking on some contracts that aren't great contracts in Courtney Lee and Tim Hardaway Jr., but I think that this situation is good for them because they've been known to do well with international players. You know, Dirk Nowitzki was one of the guys that both Luka and KP looked up to when they were young players. And so I think that this is a good situation for the Mavs. Right now you have a 1-2 punch that you can feel good about moving forward with. So I think
the
Mavs are in a position where they can continue to build. Now, it's still going to be a tough Western Conference. It's a hard road to toe. But I do like the idea of being able to pair somebody in the front court with your star in Luka Doncic in the backcourt.
All right, so there is no franchise in the league better for Kristaps than Dallas. They have obviously the greatest international player ever, or the greatest European player ever. Don't want to disrespect Hakeem. Mm-hmm. In Dirk, still there. Mm-hmm. He's got Luka there. You've got a great infrastructure there, a great medical staff there. For Kristaps, I really like this. For Dallas, it is a big swing I don't know that they needed to take. Mm. And here's my point. I understand the upside. Pardon me. The upside, excuse me, the upside's very clear for Dallas. Mm-hmm. It's exactly what you said. Two young, really unicorn-type players that if they grow together, you've got an MVP-caliber guy in Luka and an all-NBA-caliber guy in Kristaps. But you didn't need to take this risk because you have Luka. It reminds me so much of what the New Orleans Pelicans did. The New Orleans Pelicans got a generational guy in Anthony Davis. Mm-hmm. He was so good his rookie year. The next year, they were like, let's win right now. Let's trade two lottery picks for Drew Holiday and try to win right now. And they tried to microwave it, and they never got better than pretty good. The Mavs are now in this position. They will not have real cap space until 2020. Mm-hmm. They gave away this year's draft pick to get Luka. That's smart. They don't have a pick in 2019, don't have a pick in 2021. Don't have a pick in 2023. Mm-hmm. That also means you can't trade the picks you do have because of the NBA Stepien rule. So you can't even acquire a player, include a first-round pick, till 2025. They take on toxic contracts. They're about to give this guy $30 million a year. And this is now your team. If Kristaps is healthy, if he's happy, we know how good Luka's going to be, then it's great. But if Kristaps doesn't develop, if they haven't seen him play since the ACL, nobody has. If Kristaps gets dinged again, then you have taken what I would consider the single best asset in the NBA, not named Giannis Antetokounmpo, in Luka Doncic, and you've put a ceiling on the next 5 years. That is a risk I would not take. This was a move that a team that doesn't have a blue-chip prospect, I think, would make. I'm surprised Dallas did it.
Well, here's the one thing I will say to that. I think it's a gamble just because of the health of Kristaps Porzingis. The most games he played in was his rookie year. He played in 72. Since then, it's declined 66, 48, hadn't played in the game this year. So I understand where you're coming from. My only question to you would be, how else will the Dallas Mavericks going to be able to acquire a player of this caliber?
Right.
Because you think where they're at right now, they weren't going to be bad enough to get one of those top three lottery picks, mm-hmm. and you weren't going to be good enough to be considered a playoff contender. So you had to make a move if you're Mark Cuban and those guys down there in that front office. I think that this was a calculated risk. I think with the potential for Kristaps Porzingis, the reward or the player is worth the risk in that situation.
In normal cases, I would agree with you. Luka Doncic is the best player to come into the leagues. In the last 18 years, LeBron, Durant, Davis, Doncic.
Wow.
Those are the four best players to come into the league. Luka, if he's giving you 26-5 right now. If he never improves and just does this for a decade, he's a Hall of Famer. And he's going to improve. He's a teenager. I would not give up my ability to draft players. I would not give up cap flexibility. I would say we've got the only thing that matters, an MVP caliber guy to build our team around, and we've got him locked in essentially for 8 more years. Let's not try to microwave it. Now, maybe Kristaps stays healthy and it works out great. It's an enormous risk that I wouldn't take with one of the most important players in the league.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, which team will be taking home the Lombardi Trophy? Back to football. We'll break it down from all sides next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Former head coach and 3-time Super Bowl champ Eric Mangini is here. Hey, coach.
Good morning.
Good to see you with us. All right, we are now just 2 days away from Super Bowl 53. Tom Brady and the Patriots trying to win their 6th Super Bowl this century, while Jared Goff and the Rams will try and win the team's first Super Bowl in Los Angeles. A matchup between the greatest coach of all time in Bill Belichick and a young up-and-coming in Sean McVay. Experience versus inexperience. Coach, let's dive in with the obvious question. Who has the edge come Sunday?
I'm going with experience. I'm going with the fact that Bill Belichick has 43 years in the NFL, so he's got 10 more years than Sean McVay's been alive. And then you've got the experience at quarterback and the depth of experience with the assistant coaches in New England. I think all of that plays a big role, because there are a lot of things that happen differently in this week leading up to it, or 2 weeks leading up to it. In the game itself, there's things that you have to adjust to that's hard your first time to really understand and appreciate and prepare for the right way. We're New England at 9 Super Bowls. This is just another, you know, another game on the schedule.
Why do you think last year that didn't factor in so much? Maybe you think it did. Maybe that's an unfair question. I feel like the discrepancy between experience last year and this year is very similar. The Patriots hadn't been 9, they'd been to 8, but it was an Eagles team with a young coach, with a backup quarterback who had no big time experience. So why do you think that didn't apply last year? Maybe it did.
Well, the other thing that comes into play is momentum. And in our first Super Bowl year, we were 5-5 through the midway point. But then we got on a roll. And after we got on a roll, it built on itself, and I felt like Philadelphia had that same sort of momentum, and Philadelphia had that storybook
underdog
thing going. And then you get the backup quarterback, the Nick Foles. There were a lot of things that lent itself to an upset.
Well, here's the one thing I will say, Coach, and I agree with you. Experience is huge in this kind of game, but it's not just, you know, having the experience to draw on once you get to the stadium on Super Bowl Sunday. It's the experience of the 2 weeks of preparation leading up to it. And based on what we've seen from the New England Patriots, you have to give them the edge, because Bill Belichick is always a master at being able to prepare and force teams to play left-handed. He's always going to take away what you do best. And so you have to have an adjustment to that. And I think that based on what we've seen from Belichick coach teams, they're able to execute at a higher level on this stage than other teams. So I looked at last year's Super Bowl and say, had it not been for Brandon Graham getting that strip sack, we're probably talking about another Lombardi trophy case, another Lombardi in the trophy case up in New England. So I think you have to look at Bill Belichick and how he handles the weeks leading up to the Super Bowl, and that allowing his team to play with a lot more confidence, knowing that they've seen pretty much everything that the Rams are probably going to present to them. They've already accounted for all the different scenarios, the different situations that pop up in big games, and they have the confidence to execute when those moments present themselves. I can't say the same thing for Sean McVay and this upstart Rams team, which is why I got to give the edge to the Pats.
It's interesting that sometimes ignorance is truly bliss. And when you play young players, they don't even know that they're overmatched. Mm-hmm. And there's something to that. And that's something that the Rams may benefit from. They may not even realize some of the difficulties associated with the Super Bowl, and they'll look back at the game and say, God, I wish we'd done this, or I wish we'd done that. But that can actually be a helpful part of the process, too. And I appreciate the young guys that are there. There's a bunch of young guys on that staff, whether it's Shane Waldron, the passing game coordinator, Andy Dickerson, the assistant offensive line coach. Both those guys were in New England. They were part of the PhD program. They've grown up. EJ Everett is another young. I think there's a lot of young, smart coaches on staff, and it's a nice mix with Wade Phillips. And now you've got this group of stars. You've got this group of stars that have the opportunity to solidify a legacy.
Right.
And from a talent perspective, there's 7 number ones on that defense.
We were talking about this last night. I think it's really interesting. 7 number one picks on the Rams defense that they either drafted themselves or acquired via trade or free agency. Dante Fowler, the latest, the one they got midseason. And you have made the point, and I think it sounds like a basic point, but I don't think it can be hammered home enough, that when you build your team the way the Rams do, which is almost the opposite of the Patriots, as far as the Patriots don't have a ton of A players, like, you know, guys that'd be a 90-plus on Madden rating, right? Uh-huh. But they have enormous depth. When you build your team by going star, 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 those guys have to show up in a game like this. I want to talk about one of those stars on the other side of the ball, because he was a star for the Patriots last year in Brandon Cooks. And especially since Cooper Kupp went out, the Rams need Brandon Cooks to play well for the offense to look the way we know it can. My concern for the Rams and their use of Brandon Cooks is, I would imagine the Patriots know exactly what he likes to do, what he doesn't like to do, what he does well, because he was there last year with that team. If you had a player that was on your team 1 year and then you're going up against him the next year, how much of an edge does that give you schematically?
It does give you an edge, but it only gives you an edge if the other team accommodates that edge. And so, and I think the experience component to this is the same thing. So if the Rams go into the game and worry about what New England's going to do to them, they're playing catch up, and, and they don't have the lead in that. Right. If they take that back, and they force New England to constantly adjust to them, and if it's a Brandon Cooks situation where they're trying to get him open, you've got to give New England different looks. You've got to put them in different spots so that they can't just line up and take away those things that you've shown. The edge, though, would be with coaching in a player-type situation because of that intimate knowledge you have of his strengths and weaknesses.
So you're saying that it's important for the Rams to be proactive and not reactive to what the Patriots present to them?
Yeah, they're going to have to adjust, and they're going to have to go to the sideline and say, okay, this is how the game's being played. And that's an important thing to understand. But they also need to establish, we're going to try to play this game on our terms as well. You have a rule-based defense. You have a rule-based offense. You have all these things that you want to do. We're going to force you to think about it and talk about it on the sideline and adjust to us and take that edge back.
And I think the one thing that's critical to being able to do that is getting out to a hot start, because, Nick, we talked about it before, the Patriots in their 8 Super Bowls prior, they scored a grand total of 3 points in the first quarter. Right. So, I mean, that's where you have to look at, okay, the Rams have an opportunity to dictate the complexion of the game by getting out to a hot start early. I think that's something that they've got to focus on.
Great. So just so I'm clear, all the Rams have to do is get out to a hot start over the Patriots and play their game and not play reactionary football. And
you then got they it. Should you
be there you go.
All right. Advantage Rams. Coach, stick around. Coming up, can Gronk be the difference maker in possibly his final NFL game? We'll discuss that next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, with Chris Canty and for Chris Carter, who is in Atlanta this week. Time for your AT&T wake-up call. Newsflash, the Super Bowl is this Sunday. Matchup of the greatest quarterback-coach combo of all time versus the youngest quarterback-coach combo of all time. Chris Canty, what, in your opinion, is the X factor in this matchup?
I think it's going to be the running backs for both teams. For the Patriots, offensively, James White, he's an accomplished receiver out of the backfield. He's third all-time in touchdowns scored in the big game, and he's only played in 2 Super Bowls. So I think that the Patriots will look to utilize him in the passing game. You saw the Rams struggle with that against the Saints in the NFC Championship game. Alvin Kamara had 11 catches for 96 yards. I think James White will be a big part of this game.
Can the Rams get to Tom Brady with someone other than Aaron Donald? Only 3 times in Brady's entire career has one player had more than 2 sacks on him in a game. So if they're going to get to Brady a bunch of times, it's going to have to be a collective effort. Dante Fowler, their midseason acquisition. Ndamukong Suh, their offseason acquisition. Can one of those guys add some punch to what we know Donald will bring? That, to me, could be the X factor that tips the game in the Patriots' favor. In the Rams' favor, pardon me.
All right, moving on to someone who knows a thing or two about the Super Bowl, Chris Long. He helped the Patriots beat the Falcons in Super Bowl 51. He helped the Eagles beat the Patriots in Super Bowl 52. This year, he had another productive season with 6.5 sacks on an Eagles team that made another run. And he is helping us break it all down. Joining us now live from Atlanta, Chris, good morning. Thanks for getting up and hanging with us.
No problem. Good morning, y'all.
Well, so let me ask you what it's like being at the Super Bowl as a spectator after you were at the Super Bowl as a player for the prior 2 years. What's the week been like for you so far?
Well, it's funny. For 8 years, my season was done like clockwork on January 1st. So you get used to winning fast, and certainly it's better to be playing in this situation. But I'm still happy. Life is good.
All right, before we get to X's and O's and some of the great stuff you're doing off the field and this football game, let's get to what's really important. You were a freshman when our own Chris Canty was a senior at UVA. And if I know anything about Chris Canty, first of all, I don't know what transcripts he fudged to get into UVA, but that's neither here nor there. Do you have any embarrassing tales, anything to tell us about Chris Canty before he was Super Bowl champion Chris Canty that you can tell us about?
No, because to me, he was like team captain Chris Canty.
There you go, C-Long. There you go.
I'm not turning on Chris Canty.
I didn't think you were going to be snitching on here on national television this morning.
No, uh-uh.
C-Long, I got to ask you this. You've been in the big game the past 2 years, the former being with the New England Patriots, and you guys beat the Atlanta Falcons in Super Bowl 51. Talk to me about the preparation that you went through the 2 weeks leading up to it and how much of a difference it is being in a locker room with a lot of guys that have Super Bowl experience.
Yeah, the experience helps a great deal. I think the experience helps in what you talked about, which is the preparation, and it helps knowing the lay of the land when you get to an Atlanta or Minneapolis or wherever the game's played, knowing you're going to have to, you know, media and radio row every day. It's going to break up your day. There's going to be a lot of commotion, chaos. People are going to be pulling at you in 100 different directions. And when you get in your room to sleep at night, finally, it feels like you're in this fishbowl. You know, you're never alone. You never feel like settled. And that's what being at the Super Bowl is all about. And getting guys to prepare in spite of that is a big part of it.
All right, Chris, you guys invented the underdog role to the degree that you had it. You had the masks. You had a backup quarterback. It was authentic. It was real. Now the greatest dynasty in the history of professional football has tried to take that mantle and say, actually, no one believes in us. What has been your reaction seeing the most successful team ever take on your guys' underdog role?
Well, I like the way you're framing it. It's cool to influence people, so if that's what's going on, it's an honor. But I think at the end of the day, this Patriots team does have a lot of detractors and doubters. You know, for a long time, people have waited for their demise, and this year they certainly have been a different type of team, and they've had their lulls like anybody else, so people jumped at the opportunity, and they remember that stuff. But at the same time, yeah, they're favored in the game. So I don't know if they can put the dog masks on, but whatever gets those guys going, Tom's a great motivator, Bill's a great motivator, and they have had their doubters.
Chris Canty gave us a little insight into what happens in the last 48 hours, that there are some tweaks that are made to the game plans. There are a couple of new plays that are being put in. Your Eagles took down the Patriots last year to win Super Bowl 52. What advice now would you give Wade Phillips and the Rams defense for slowing down Tom Brady? Because obviously Wade is watching and he's going to need a few more extra little pieces of advice and insight to tweak for this defense.
Well, the front has to stay patient. The front can't get discouraged. You're not going to touch Tom for long periods of time. Timing, passing, they're going to take away your best player. They're going to throw the kitchen sink at Aaron Donald. Guys like Fowler and Sue have to step up. And I think they will. And there's going to be times where in your head you're saying, man, it's the third quarter and we haven't really gotten a good hit on him. But like we did in the game, we stayed after it. And eventually they have to go away from chipping out and seven-man protecting and quick passing. And BG was able to make a big play. You got to make it count when you get there.
Chris, your Eagles beat the Rams in L.A. the past two regular seasons. What is the key, in your opinion, in slowing down that explosive Rams offense?
Well, I think it's your offense controlling the football, and that's something that the Patriots have done well. If I'm the Rams, I want the ball at the beginning of the game, seeing the Patriots' last two opening drives against the Chargers and then against the Chiefs. They were tone-setting drives. They were about 10 minutes apiece, and that's demoralizing, not just for the defense, but it puts pressure on the offense. If we go out here and go three and out, this could get ugly early.
Aaron Donald might be the best player in the NFL. We always talk about quarterbacks, guys who score touchdowns. But okay, you said it. He is. You played with him. Yeah. I assume he learned most of it from you, but the things he didn't learn from you, what makes him? What makes him so special? Like, what? There's a lot of great athletes in the league. What makes him differentiate himself?
So I will take credit for being the first one to say he's a Hall of Famer, and I stand by that. So, but at the end of the day, I think his work ethic, you know, you get into the film room and you think you're the last guy in the building. You know, you're an eight-year vet, and there's this rookie, you got to kick him out of the film room. And that's the way he works. When you pair that with his physical ability, his violence on the field, his leverage, he's got the leverage of somebody who's 5'10", but the length of somebody who's 6'5". He's got great hips. He flips his hips well. He's got a second and third move where most guys don't have a counter, and I think that's what makes him great.
Chris, I want to bring it a little bit closer to home and talk about your team. There have been some reports out of Philadelphia that Carson Wentz was selfish or egotistical and that he needs to change in terms of his approach and relating to his teammates and the coaching staff. To that, you say what?
To that, I say, well, first off, I'm like, well, it was 11 days ago, so I don't want to give it legs like that. But at the same time, I just feel like guys came out in defense of Carson right away. The reality is Carson's a great teammate. He's always been an exemplary teammate to me, and I'm not a big fan of anonymous sources, so I try not to give it too much legs anymore.
What do you make of the ability? It felt to me watching that when Nick Foles was in there, that the secondary played some of its best football. You guys looked more as pass rushers like this Super Bowl champion Eagles. Obviously, the quarterback is not actually affecting the way the defense is playing. What do you make of how those lined up and some of the narrative surrounding that?
Well, I think at the time that Nick stepped in, and unfortunately for Carson, when his injury got too much to play with, we got healthy in a lot of spots. I mean, pure and simple. I mean, you look at some key offensive pieces. You know, we acquire Golden Tate. Sproles gets healthy, who's still an amazing player. We get Timmy Jernigan back on defense. We get some keys back in the secondary. Some young guys step up. They start to, guys that were coming off the street are starting to learn the defense and gel together. So for Nick's, you know, for the sake of Nick, everybody kind of got on board and was playing good ball. It was unfortunate for Carson because he missed the boat on that. We had a lot of the same issues we had 2 years ago now. Were we able to overcome it and still win the Super Bowl? But that's the anomaly. That's the exception to the rule. We had a lot of those same issues this year. It just wasn't enough to overcome.
Chris, at this point, we basically know everything there is to know about Tom Brady, the way he eats, sleeps, trains, relates to his wife, as a father, as a teammate, all of it. He made headlines by saying recently, "You think I play to go to Pro Bowls? We're actually trying to win rings." Can you just give us a little bit of insight into what? Is there anything we don't know about him, the way he trains, the way he approaches games like the Super Bowl, into how competitive he is? I mean, what's something that's just not quite out there yet about Tom Brady, even if it's something small?
Man, that is a tough question because everybody's trying to crack the Tom Brady code. But I just think, you know, I remember one situation when I got New England, and I've been a good player in the league, but by no means a superstar, in my opinion. And I get to New England, and, you know, Tom comes up to me and promptly introduces himself. "Hi, Chris, my name's Tom. Nice to meet you." And I'm like, "Yeah, I know your name's Tom, dude. Like, you don't need to introduce yourself." But that's the type of teammate he is, and it's not an act. I mean, he genuinely cares for everybody in the locker room, whether you just got there or whether you've been there 10 years. And he's the type of guy that, you know, in your locker room, when your best players are humble guys, down to earth and take care of each other, your team's going to be good too.
Chris, you doubled up on me on Super Bowl rings. You got one with the Patriots and one with the Eagles. Which one do you cherish the most?
Well, you know, I got to say it's a tie. I mean, one of them, 28-3, will never be duplicated, that comeback. And being a part of that machine that's kind of churned out a bunch of championships was great. You know, Philly was like a three-month adrenaline rush. You know, that run, you know, including when we had Carson, you know, still. We were picked to be like 27th in the league, last in our division. It was unbelievable before Carson went down. It became more unbelievable with Nick. And, you know, that run we went on and ended with beating the Patriots, who I think were like 10-point favorites against us. So at the end of the day, they were both different for a lot of reasons. No matter how many championships they win in Philly, we'll always be the first, and that's special.
Chris, your football resume is unreal, obviously. Number two pick of the draft. You're a guy who now is a two-time Super Bowl champion. I actually find what you've done off the field to be more impressive. You are one of, and I say this with knowing how many great people are in the NFL, one of the greatest human beings in the league as far as what you've done with your platform to help people who are less fortunate. You might be rewarded this year with the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award for that, and we'll talk more about that in a bit. But I am curious, what made you decide last year you were going to play this game for free, and what has made you decide to become such a humanitarian in addition to football player?
Well, for me, I mean, my wife and I have always had causes we got behind in St. Louis. I mean, we tried to be very charitable in that community. We did a lot of that more under the radar. And there was a realization I had at some point in the league where I said, you know, I've got this platform. We've got this great, you know, vehicle to make change in fans and the NFL community. You know, we need to do more things. We need to form a foundation and do some public stuff. And, you know, fortunately that happened around the same time that I got on good teams, and that elevates everything you do off the field. So whether it's our clean water initiative at waterboys.org or the educational equity stuff that you're talking about, they're decisions that we make knowing that we need to lean on the fans. And the fans, like you said, I donated my salary. Okay, that's cool. But the fans doubled the investment in educational equity in all three cities I played. So without them, you know, the footprint's not as big.
All right, Chris. Well, as Nick mentioned, you are the 2018 Walter Payton Man of the Year Award nominee presented by Nationwide. Tell us a little bit about what that means to you.
Well, it means a lot. I mean, it elevates all 32 nominees' causes. You know, Nationwide's done a great job of elevating an award that was already prestigious. You know, they give us $50,000 to be nominated. If you win, you get $250,000 to your foundation. So, obviously, we're all trying to win. But at the same time, it's not about the award to me. That's not why any of us do it. You know, and somebody said something to me. They were like, hey, you know, all your hard work's paying off. And I said, no, the hard work's already paid off. It's paying off when we provide clean water or books to kids who don't have them. You know, and it will continue to pay off whether we win an award or not. But it does help elevate our causes a lot.
Chris, you've had an amazing pro career, 11 years. I know toward the end of it, guys start thinking about retirement. I'm going to give you a chance to break some news on our show first. Are you thinking about retirement, or are you going to come back and play in 2019?
I will break the news that for the month of February, I'm not exercising. And it might feel like retirement, but I don't know what's going to happen.
All right. Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining us. Really good stuff. And continue with the important work that you're doing. It is
thank
very
you, man.
Appreciate
congrats.
It, big fella.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.